He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
All right, guys, thanks for supporting the show. I got a list of sponsors here. So first off, we got Harito Bending, harito-bending.com. You're going to use promo code CHEERS for 10% off. And a portion of that sale is going to come back to support the show. So I appreciate that. You know, everybody wants to be on the Harito cert list. I haven't heard a bad thing about the quality of his bolts. I can personally say that they're the same every time. Some really hard bolts on there. He got certs for every style, including snapping. He's also got wraps and t-shirts on there. So definitely hit up HaritoBending.com and use the promo code CHEERS. Next, we got Jed Johnson's Nail Bending eBook. If you want to check this ebook out, if you're a beginner, message me for the link, because if you use this link, a portion of that sale is going to come back to support the show. We also have the Gripito Trainer. This is an all-in-one grip training tool. If you use promo code Beyond the Bend, you're going to save 15% off of a sale of $90 or more. We also have Gil, former guest, BarrelStrengthSystems.com. Use promo code BEYOND for 10% off. Gil's got a ton of cool stuff on there, including the flask. This is a pinch device. If you can do a body weight pull-up on this thing, you're going to get on a roster. I think that's pretty cool. All right. Lastly, we have Hard Life Fightwear. That's hardlifefightwear.com or .co.uk. If you want some rash guards or something like that for jiu-jitsu, they also got a bunch of other cool t-shirts on there. You're going to use promo code Beyond the Bend for 15% off. Also, if you want to get on a roster, an unofficial roster, hit up at Eat Chalk Get Big on Instagram. If you bent a 80D unbraced or two 60Ds taped together unbraced, you're going to get on an unofficial roster. The other thing is, if you snapped a horseshoe, I don't need a video. I'm keeping track of people who've snapped horseshoes just because it's a cool thing to do. If you've also snapped one into three pieces, hit me up. Or if you've snapped one laying down, there's only two people on that list, so get on it. Last thing, a couple new things coming up. I'm going to be putting out a feat of the week. This isn't really a challenge more than just like something cool to do week by week. It's going to be just like some athletic stuff mixed with some bending and snapping. So I'm going to be putting that out. And the only way to participate is just to do it and then tag me in the post and throw it up on Instagram or Facebook. The other thing is every month, I'm going to be doing a monthly challenge. We've had some really good participation lately. I want to keep that going. I have some really cool things planned. So I really appreciate everybody's support and looking forward to another good year. All right. Thanks.
Beyond the bend, beyond the bend.
All right, Sean Dougherty, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. This is actually, I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
That means a lot, man. Thank you. So quick backstory for the people. This is such a cool, unique experience to be talking to Sean, because prior to even starting any grip strength stuff, any bending, I was training jiu-jitsu, getting ready for a tournament, and I was looking at a lot of catch wrestling stuff, and I listened to a podcast called Scientific Wrestling with Jake Shannon and Joel Bain, the one of the What is he? Just like the founders of Snake Pit?
Yeah, he's the founder of Snake Pit USA.
Okay. Founder of Snake Pit Catch Wrestling was talking Sean up about their time in the Air Force and training together. So I made a mental note to be sure to look what I could up about Sean. Fast forward, he hooks up with former guest Scott Shetler to do some training. And Scott is my strength coach. So he put us in touch, and it turns out Sean is way into Old Time Strongman, has done some bending of his own. So this is a really wild, like, meshing of all my world. So I couldn't be happier about it, man. Plus he's a punk rocker. So this is the trifecta.
Skateboarding too.
Yeah, man. Isn't that cool? Like,
I love that. You know, it's like in jiu-jitsu, sometimes there's weird hero worship stuff. Like, and I find like once, anytime someone brand new come in or something like that, even though I've been doing it for a lot of years, like if I, obviously I treat everybody cool, but if you find out like you have that extra thing together, like they are a skateboarder, they are in punk, then it's like everything's off and you're just like best friends straight out, you know?
Yeah, totally. I think that's what Aristotle like referred to as like the optimal friendship, like the true friendship. It's not just a friendship of like, yeah, we can do this, we're useful to each other. And then there's a friendship where we just enjoy being around. So one is like your friends at work and others are the ones you party with. But the ones that you can party with and be friends with at work, that's a true friend. You know what I mean? And so it's when, it's when the Venn diagrams kind of cross a little bit, you know what I mean? We get more flower of life, kind of circular interconnections of membranes, you know, they all overlap. And it's like a speed of trust. Because of those experiences, we tend to trust each other more. We look like each other more. Because we want familiarities and we want similarities, and that's how we can open up faster, is when we actually can. And if every human on this planet ever actually stopped and had a 10-minute deep conversation, they'd actually find they got some shit connected like crazy. Yeah. Like everybody could be cool with each other if you just stop and talk for a minute.
Yep, I've said it on the show before. It's like when my wife found out I was starting a podcast, she was kind of like chuckling because I'm not one for small talk, you know what I mean? Like, because if you're in some situation where you feel like, I use the example, like, you go like, oh, what kind of music you like? They just go, oh, whatever's on the radio. I'm just like, all right, well, I can't really deal with this or go any deeper. But if I sense someone has some like true passion and love for something, it doesn't have to be what I'm into, you know what I mean? It can just, like, as long as they just have some passion for something, we have common ground right there. Like if they nerd out about something, I remember I talked to somebody about comics. That's not my deal at all, but I could sense that they were into it on that level. And it turned out the dude liked Bad Brains anyway. So it's like we wound up on some common ground anyway, you know?
There's always that common ground if you just take your time.
Yep. So I start every show asking the guest, when was the first time you remember seeing someone bend a piece of steel?
Okay. It's the cheesy kind of like Ripley's Believe It or Not back in the day, you know, the 80s, I was just a little kid, you know, that's when I saw it live. You'd have like the Strong Men for Christianity or something, you know, bending stuff for Jesus, you know, that's always a good sell. What else? Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, early 80s, just a kid, kind of like when you're seeing anything else. I mean, it's always been in our culture, if you think about it. I bet you nobody can say that they never saw it happen.
Right.
I mean, it was so celebrated, especially, you know, within the you know, what do you call it? The bodybuilding really wasn't a fringe. It was always in our culture. Everybody knows what bodybuilding is. Everybody knows what all these things are, and everybody's heard about the circus guy, the vaudeville strong man, you know, that kind of stuff. Everybody sees the anyhow press, you know, with the dumbbell, with the 500, you know, the big, it's always a big fat guy doing it, a big giant, huge guy doing it. And it was always a huge guy doing it. Who cares when my first time was, because it was always a big guy. What impressed me was when I learned about Joseph Greenstein. And how he was 145 pounds ish, 5'4", something crazy like that. You know, when they're doing the same kind of things as the guys who are 200 pounds, 300 pounds, that's the most memorable part, was learning about Joseph Greenstein. And he
totally
was a vaudeville guy. So,
yeah, you know,
the mighty Adam.
Yeah, 100%, that's man.
That's my first time truly the awe. Not just seeing, because that first time is that's a shtick, you know, that everybody does that shit, you know, who cares, you know, a dime a dozen. It was 19, probably like 98, 99-ish. That was when I saw bending for my first time.
Nice. Now, were you already grappling at that time? Like, was the jiu-jitsu connection to the Mighty Adam a thing, or?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially since Mighty Adam was a catch wrestler and a judoka, right. who went to Japan and learned everything. And then he did catch wrestling matches here in the States. But yeah, no, I was already, so my, this month is my 31 year anniversary of martial arts in general. And then this year, March will be what, like 27 years of whatever 1994 till now is, that's yeah. my grappling
time. Wow.
So, but yeah, like during the time when, like around the same time I got into bending and everything, I was also a tree service climber.
Oh, you know, nice. Yeah.
You know, you not with a bucket, you know, you use a ball thing, you throw it up the highest notch and you got to pull yourself up and ratchet yourself in the tree. And then you cut your way down and paddle down. But my grip strength was so insane at that time. And when I started under John in 1997, my grip strength started then, because grip strength, he taught as part of the actual curriculum of Shingitai Jiu-Jitsu that we had to have great grip strength. You know, everything started there, especially for no gi. If you're going to translate judo into no gi throws, you have to have great grip strength. All your submissions have to have great grip strength. So I had all the tools, like the telegraph I had access to, already had all the hub, you know, grips, you know, the softball grips, you know, eagle claw, you know, things with that. I mean, any kind of roller, you know, doing pinch grips with the 45-pound plates. Because when I met John, he was already doing the 45-pound grips. And where he learned all this stuff from was a guy named Peter Ragnar. Or
okay.
Was that his name? He goes by Ragnar and Peter... Peter Lindell, something like that.
Sounds familiar.
Lindell or something like that. But he lives in like Tennessee, the mountains of Tennessee. He's like a vegan and stuff like that. So Greenstein was a vegetarian, vegan type thing. So there's like this mental mind metal bender kind of thing. It's not about being muscle strong. It's all about in the mind. And the strength in the loins and in the sinews kind of thing, in the mind.
Uh-huh. 100%, man. Can you give the people a little bit of background on John? Because a lot of people probably don't know who you're talking about when you say John Saylor.
Okay, John Saylor, he used to be the head coach at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs for the judo team. He was Olympic hopeful. He was actually on the road to it when he had his final match, basically, where he was throwing a guy and he got thrown and he ended up landing on his shoulder. It severed his brachial artery and his brachial nerve plexus. It left him paralyzed, his whole left arm. You know, so since the early 80s, he's had just one arm, you know. But anyways, he developed what's called Shingitai Jiu-Jitsu in Colorado. Back then it was called Shingitai Goshin Jitsu. But what he was trying to do was, this is late 80s, coming into the early 90s, he was already doing things in the Olympic Training Center that was much like UFC. He was like having styles fight styles to figure out what worked and what didn't when you cross patterned with them. Like what got nullified in boxing or kickboxing or whatever when they went up against a judo guy, or when a wrestler went up against this and this and that. And he started formulating a formal kind of like a mixed martial art, a syllabized mixed martial art. Where he created fluid chains from the striking to the grappling, you know, to the upright grappling through the throw. Like, so a seamless transition from striking to throwing to ground to submission kind of thing. It was, to me, I would call it like a traditional mixed martial art, like it was already a syllabized mixed martial art. And even, you know, there's fun stories that we have, you know, about the Gracie Challenge, you know, coming to Colorado Springs when John was there, you know, and there's footage that didn't make it to the Gracie Challenge because it wasn't so flattering. Horion and John. They went to a draw a couple times, but still John had one arm. So what it is was, you know, Shingitai Jiu-Jitsu was like where it was really coming about, like when UFC kicked in and Hoist, you know, you have the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu and came into play and really took the America by storm. And the name Jiu-Jitsu was only now being used with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, or not even that, Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. Right. So Shingitai Jiu-Jitsu didn't have a chance to even like in the marketing aspect to be known, it kind of got drowned out, you know? So it kind of like, if it wasn't Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, if it wasn't Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, nobody wanted to hear about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, but all of us members, you know, we're a lot of us members are Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belts, we're judo black belts, we're also karate or taekwondo black belts or aikido, but you know what I mean? We're this eclectic group, you know, that has been doing all this stuff that everybody's wooing and wowing about for the past 30 years.
Yep. Yep. Now, didn't he eventually have some affiliation with West Side and stuff?
Oh yeah. That was another thing. You know, as soon as I went under John, I went under Louis Simmons as well. I mean, that was one of the first people John had me meet. We went down and had lunch with Louis and had a workout at his place, you know, and I walk into that place, and this is when it was in a little strip mall, you know, this would have been 97, 98. And I'm only, dude, I'm pushing 200 pounds tops, right? And I walk into this place and I immediately go into fight or flight. Like the energy and the size of these motherfuckers, dude, I was like looking for the nearest weight plate to pick up to add my, you know, like just in case, because no, you felt it, you know, and Lou was just like, yeah, go ahead. You know, they were talking about me. Like, he's like, yeah, go ahead, fuck with him. Let's see what happens. Yeah, yeah, he looks small. He's the smallest guy here, but this and that. And I was like, okay, that was Lou protecting me, I think. You know, I didn't think that was true. So much technique is only going to get you through if somebody grabs a hold of you and just fucking rips you apart.
Yeah. Not,
you know, I mean, there's people that strong. And, you know, I wasn't fragile back then. I was well put together, but, you know, now I'm from, oh, God, man. I hurt myself. I tap myself out when I'm.
Yeah. So let's talk about the tone of that place really quick, because that's just a pretty unique thing to experience, especially in that time. So you're talking 97, 98. You had already fought in UFC 2, right? You had a bunch of training with Ken Shamrock and Lion's Den under your belt. And you walk into West Side at that time, and it was still intimidating, huh?
Yeah, dude, I was always the smallest. I'm always the smallest person in the room, dude. Like,
I feel you.
No, I always was. I was always just the smallest, you know. And I was always the least best, you know, least good. You know, you know, people would say, "Oh, you're strong. Oh my God, you guys should do about." You know, I go around. Oh, you're good. Oh my God, you should see the people I train with. They're the good ones. I mean, fuck, dude, I'm just a messenger. And, you know, and what are we gonna give the technique the honor instead of the people?
Yeah, right.
It's like, I don't know. It was just a thought I had, and I needed to get out into the out of the ether and into the crystallized world. Was, you know, like everybody naming shit, you know, like, because I was posting shit today, you know, and I got this arm bar that I just called Scythe because that's what it looks like, but everybody's got another name for it. And it's just like, everybody wants honor for it. It's like, guys, we just are the messengers, you know, we, because somebody was like, yeah, I was just thinking about this. And somebody was like, man, we our brains are on the same wavelength. I'm like, yeah, but all it is it's all there. That information is always there. If you just learn how to tune yourself into it and just relax and just let it flow through you, dude, stuff comes out, man. Like every day I create a new technique. And when I say new technique, I mean something that was never taught to me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Pieces just come together and come out. And whoever's there is like, ooh, wow. Well, yeah, I just made that up. But it's not me. It doesn't matter. It's just a technique. It's been around for thousands of years, I guess. You know?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
You know, we just happen to be there together, and we saw this cool, you know, it's like, that's all my jiu-jitsu is, you know, it's not a soul-wide thing. It's a, once I die, it's gone. You know, I don't have nothing written down, and I'm not going to. I teach my students how to like become it, you know, what we're trying to do is become. So,
yeah, that's, I love that, man. Yeah. And it's the same with the bending and everything else. Don Cummings, a friend of mine and former guest on the show and serious heavy hitter bender, told me that Da Vinci bent horseshoes, man. Like, so it's like nothing is new. It's all been done, and it's just getting recreated and coming through in different cycles, you know, just like music.
But I like the creativity that's happening. You guys are coming up with different bends that I never saw from back in the day either, you know, just from 20 years ago.
Yeah. So talk me through the, so you hooked up with John, and then was the grip training just immediately part of like the overall system?
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, whatever John believed in, he, you know, it was practice. Everybody had to practice it. you know, yeah. Kind of, it's a, you know, benevolent dictator, in a very good way. I mean, he's the most awesome guy. You could trust your life in his hands, kind of thing. You know, I still do to this day. But yeah, the grip strength was right off the bat, and it was, you know, a religious kind of thing. You know, I got into the book. That's all he had to do for me was just put this book.
Yeah.
Right here in my hands, dude. I read it every time I was on the toilet, and I think that's how I got my hemorrhoid issues. I can't put that thing down. I read it like four times, and when it first came out, I bought a bunch of them, and I gave them to a bunch of my friends, kind of like how a religious fanatic would, you know, with their religion.
Yeah.
You know, like I was handing them out like tracts. I was like, it's going to change your life. It's going to change your life. Because it's the mental stuff. That's the mental journey. That's, he calls it the spiritual journey. I call it, you know, it's more like a mental journey. You know, yeah. There's so much that he talks about. I was listening to the podcast with you and that one lady. It was a recent podcast. I queued it up.
Yeah.
One of the female vendors, I forget her name. But you guys were
Amanda Hudson.
Yes. There's lots of things you guys talked about that, you know, came back from the book.
Yeah.
You know, he talked about, you know, he was of the Jewish descent. He was really into the cabal. And he was talking about the spark of life that everybody has in them. And it's that spark that gives us the power to do this. I mean, he would hypnotize people who've never bent before or anything. He would pull them off the street and he would hypnotize them and say, okay, I found this. Remember we were walking in the woods the other day and we came across a little piece of wire, and the guy would say, yes, you know, and he says, okay, I have this piece of wire in my hand. It was actually a bar, you know, like a nail, more of like maybe a 20 or less. It's something a normal guy off the street couldn't normally do, right?
Yeah.
So he put it in his hand and he says it was a little piece of wire, and he told the guy to grab it firmly and just bend that wire. You know you can do it. Just bend that wire going, you know, and then the guy just took it and bent the nail or whatever and halved it. And it was like, what the heck, you know? So a lot of the mental part about it really got into me. So when I did my bending, I did a lot of I always did it barehanded. I never used wraps. So I developed these calluses, like right here, this part got real thick, lost the nerve, like, and I couldn't feel for a long time there. And over on this hand where I start the bend, because it was a bend that was like started like on my thigh, and I pushed down.
Yeah.
And then like that, and then bite it and close it. So it's like in the book where he bit down on the table and I had indents in my teeth and in the nail. So I would do stuff like that. Like everything I did was barehanded. So I tried to stay true to it. I realized later when you got bigger, like heavier and heavier, you had to use the wraps and stuff.
Yeah.
But when in 2002, when I was at Dover Air Force Base, there was a guy named Chuck Thompson. He was a strong man. He towed their C-130s and stuff like that. And he's so strong. And just like in the book, you know, where the guy with the back squat was challenging Tom Joseph, you know, you're not the true strongest man. What are you strongest then? I'm not the strongest. You know, I don't do back squat. You know, I can't do back squat. Can you bend this? No, I can't bend it. So he was about how strong he was and everything. So I brought the next, I was talking about what I could do. He's like, bullshit. So I brought in a couple 20 pennies. The next day I filed off the tip, you know, just so I could just do it in front of him barehanded. And, you know, he got pissed. I did it. I did both of them. He tried one and I did both of them. I did a double. And he was so pissed off about that because he was so damn strong and so big and I was so little that I could do this thing. But it comes down to that. There's the conditioning of the tendons and the ligaments, you know, it's skeletal strength. And then there's this thing that Joseph Greenstein talked about, he said as he got older, he felt as if like he couldn't exert as much anymore because it was taking parts of like his life force away from him.
Wow.
And because you have to put, this is a meditation. Think about it before you begin that bend. Think of the psychic energy, the mental, everything. It's like very much qigong, if you think about it. It's like internal, like martial arts kind of energy where you bring all your isometrics together and into a perfect timing. It's nothing mystical. It's just the timing of the muscle contractions. You know what I'm talking about? It comes on, you go, like it everything wraps and bends around all at once. And it's that initial, that blood pressure blood pressure spike that your shit isn't tight, you're gonna have an and it's yep. that there's that point right there. That whole beginning thing is a topic to talk about in and of itself.
Yeah.
It's that do or die. Like I did this in front of my speech class in 2000. And it was the first time I ever been at 20. I never did a 20 in my life, right? Like I was getting up there and I never did it, especially not barehanded. And I did a vaudeville type presentation for my speech class. I wore my Speedos.
Oh, funny. Yeah.
And I was talking like Joseph Greenstein, you know, I was talking about this life. I'm talking about all this stuff, you know, and it helped because my, you know, not to be crass or anything like that, but you know, my professor was gay. So at the time. Yeah. Oh gosh. So anyways, I put myself on the spot, dude. I put myself in this do or die situation that I knew that was going to push me to bend this fucking thing that I couldn't do before.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm standing there about to be embarrassed in front of everybody. I was already embarrassed because I'm doing this stupid thing. Got it. I got an A. So, and I got an A in the whole class. So it really worked. So anyways, I performed the bend in front yep. of the class and boom, boom, and completely brought it.
Nice. Today.
You know, so, and I passed it around beforehand, passed it around after, you know, it was a cool little thing, but I put myself on the spot because there was no getting out of it. It was this do or die moment you have to have. And there's like this, whenever we bend something, there really is this putting something on the line for your health.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're risking a broken bone. You're risking a ruptured tendon or a ligament, you know, you might not ever get that nerve feeling back.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very sithy, you know,
yep.
like every time you use the dark side of the force, you get damaged, you know, it's
yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about this today because, so there's a new roster by this guy, Jan Heller, who's out in Germany, and he sponsors the show. It's called Harito Bending. And if anyone wants to save 10%, you got to type in promo code CHEERS. But so I'm doing a little interview with him because he's releasing some written interviews with people in the community. And he thought it'd be a cool thing for the interviewer to get interviewed, right? So I'm filling out this thing today. And the question was something along the lines of like, what does steel bending mean for you or something? And I just said like, that moment when you lay into it, the moment you're explaining, right? Just even the moment after, when hopefully that thing starts to freaking move,
and you gotta get this like push.
That's when, like, boom! Like, for me, I just feel like there's the path is like enlightened. It's like, okay, now I know what this takes to actually bend. Like, you get so much information back from that initial hit. You're like, you're basically told one whether you can do it or not. Like, because if you get that little movement, then you're charged up and you're like, all right, I should be able to finish this thing. And two, it's just like, you just feel like, okay, that's the place I need to go to actually get this piece of steel to move. It's just a unique feeling, totally, totally unique from anything else I've ever done.
I agree. And think about what's actually happening in that initial blast. You just created like this huge fucking like fire.
Yeah.
You just ignited that word, that bent, that was fire, because that now becomes like, we'll say molten, right?
And yeah, before, well, it gets hot.
And if you don't give that part you talked about, that boom, and then you got to come in with that yeah. second wave. It's not the first wave. The first wave cracks it and the second wave brings it in. And that's yeah. that if you don't have that second wave, you just tempered that joint.
Yeah.
Now you just made it 10 times harder to bend, and you damn near like very few people can bend it again after it already tempered.
Yeah. 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 And it's this stuff relating back to jiu-jitsu is like, if you're going after a joint lock with that amount of precision and focus and everything in line, this is my theory, like that's going to be a tight, terrifying lock. That's going to be a scream tap, you know.
Dude,
that's going to be a fear tap.
Everything should be lined up to where as soon as this happens, that yep. the tap to begin there,
yep.
you know, whatever's going on, you know, the tap starts when the hands close. That's how everything should be lined up.
Yeah. Just like taking the slack out of the bar, like when you're deadlifting, like tink, yep. that should be it.
Yep. And that's what I call it. That's exactly what I call it. Like I'll grab wrists, right? Like if I'm going for a Kimura, I'll throttle it away from me, right?
Yep.
And that wraps the tendons and the muscle around the bone, takes all the slack out. So by the time I just get my hands in place, I don't even need to like bring it back. The tap happens as soon as my hands lock.
Right.
If it's Americana, right. You throttle it away from you. So Kimura is a throttle towards you on the wrist.
Yep.
Americana is a throttle away. So Americana will twist out this way. Kimura twisted this way. And that takes all that slack out. And then when you got your grip, and matter of fact, even when we grip things, I still follow like gripping the sword pattern. My grips this, it winds things and it does things to the body when you grip like that. Even or the gi combo.
Yep, 100% for sure. So we talked about, I think I messaged you about basically body tension and my struggles with creating it because of so jiu-jitsu probably different from catch wrestling. I mean, you teach jiu-jitsu, so you know, but I guess for the people is like well, you teach grappling, say.
No, you're right. You're right. I'm just formulating my mind. I'm not disagreeing. I'm like seeing it and like, yeah, okay, I see where you're at. I'm just saying awesome. It's a wild topic, dude. It's one that it's like so weird.
Right. So in jiu-jitsu, there is no pin, right? So you can be loose. Say someone's bigger than you and on top of you and cross mount, side control.
You're on your back, you can rest.
Yeah, you can rest.
You don't apply any submission holds. If you frame out, you can rest. There's no risk of losing any points.
And it's strategic to rest in a manner where you're not going to burn yourself out, right? So I've developed through grappling I was 99% grappling only and a little bit of strength here or there until this year. So in my own lifting, it's been a real chore to be able to get that body tension, you know, where you're tensed up, because it's not in my nature to get tense, because I would always be trying to chill till that one moment when I would have to explode and escape or whatever. But I'm not comfortable with being tense over a long period of time because I feel like it's going to drain my gas tank. And it's for the heavier compound lifts, it's been a real struggle to try to develop that. It's very counterinstinctual for me.
Same here, because I start off with standing martial arts, taekwondo, kung fu, you know, all that stuff. And it's all about staying relaxed so you don't telegraph and you tighten up at the very end, bam, you know, kind of thing. Everything is always that nothing and until the end, you know, even in catch wrestling, you do it on. They rest, it's just on top.
Yeah.
You know, that's all, you know, they have their resting moments, but yeah, like everything that I've done was all about relaxation and doing everything relaxation. So anything ever I did heavy, I never did. I'm telling you, dude, it was only over the past, since I started getting back surgeries that I learned how to actually engage my core. I always just tried to relax everything. Just my whole mentality since I was a kid of martial arts is relax all your muscles until the end, you know? And I also, that's how I conserve energy. And I think I'm just a lazy motherfucker, really. I think I'm just a lazy fighter if I just try to relax a lot. So I have Kevlar mesh holding my abdomen together. If that gives you an indicator of how my lifting form was dog shit, you know? Deadlifting heavy, and I didn't even really know how to use a belt right. You know, I never was I'm a student of Louis Simmons, but it's the conjugate side of things and just
that
I've never like under him directly, you know, it's always visits and things like that. So don't ever, when you hear me talk right now, don't blame Louis, don't blame anything else.
Understood.
In powerlifting and everything and not really fully understand how to engage your core properly for, you know, so you don't get injury, you know. I have like I said just recently, I was shoveling the driveway earlier. I was like, man, this is a great topic. I mean, I hope we do discuss this, because I was just like, I was relaxed for a second. And I got to fucking, you know, there's a lot of holding your breath. That's the problem. Yeah. There's a lot of holding your breath. And I get attacks when I hold my breath. So I've spent my whole life constantly trying to breathe and not holding my breath and bearing down and stuff like that because of my health and shit like that. So like, I've torn my abdomen apart by not bearing down the way I'm supposed to. Because you know how much I'll be holding my breath in a fight? I can't be doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
The dudes that who can do it and they have the endurance to hold the breath and power through things and stuff like that, yeesh, those guys who have the upper hand, not me. So yeah, no, I totally 100%. When you were talking about that on, I think I listened to you talk about that
with Scott.
Yeah. It was, yeah, that's a, the, I have Kevlar, yeah, I have a Kevlar abdomen because of that.
Wow. You know? You know what I think it is too? It's like, so with the bending, I'm good for one. I think you just said something that makes total sense to me, because it's not necessarily the initial brace. It's then breathing within the brace that's very, very difficult. And I think it just makes me feel like my gas tank is dwindling. And it's just not something that feels natural to me. So I abandon on it. So when I'm doing heavy deadlifts for reps, I'm all whacked out. Like, it's like, I have to really, really focus on that bracing. And I think bending is somewhat okay, because it's a big brace, bam, and then a big brace, bam, and hopefully we're done for close to, right? It's not as prolonged. And I think there is my issue. And probably a lot of grapplers that are coming over to lifting, if they have a lot of grappling under their belt first.
Oh yeah, there's that. The tension versus relaxation is always going to be a yin yang for it, and it's a metaphor for
yeah.
I'm just now, I mean, I'm 45, about to be 46, like I'll be 46 next month, understanding internal pressure and how to really use it, and also the circular breathing, learning how to keep it, you know, while breathing. Like I can do it on command now, because I've had to be so mindful for this since 2012, when I woke up with my left paralyzed. So, and I've had three lower back surgeries. You know, the last one, I have two titanium rods down there, and now, and I have a titanium plate from C6 to T1. So like this hand is completely like, I can almost touch my fingers together, but it's atrophied like crazy. But I can still do stuff. I mean, from my bending, this is what I contribute to my bending. Like this hand, by nature, by law, like this is so atrophied, the nerve damage and stuff like that, I shouldn't be able to pull this, but I can hang with one hand still.
Wow.
I can still engage it. I can still call upon whatever's in my body to make this thing go. It might break. No, if I tried to bend, honestly, like I toyed with the idea of like trying to like on the podcast to force myself into a bend, but this hand, the bones move so much because there's no cartilage in here anymore, that I'm afraid it would actually like one of my metacarpals will come out.
Yeah.
Or even break. I mean, and then I was thinking about that today, the amount of conditioning, guys, that you have to do for bending, it goes far and beyond. It's right up there with like iron fist type kung fu type mystical stuff. I mean, your hands, the things that take place in this area, the thickness that happens in your wrist and everything, for grapplers, guys, it's superior. I mean, if you're not doing grip work, start, you know. I mean, hopefully this is a good cross market
where
we can get the audience, you know, into this and, you know, like do grip strength training for BJJ. I mean, they're doing stuff like, they think it's innovative to like, the, you know, when they get the gi sleeves with a girth hitch kind of loop, you know, like the eagle kind of loop.
Yeah.
And they're just, oh, we're cutting edge, guys. We've been doing this stuff, you know, holding on to razor thin stuff to train our grip for a long time. This is class.
For sure.
There's so many things. And now that torpedo thing
that
everybody's using, that's you see something simple like that, but that all has its roots with your sport.
Yeah,
you know,
thanks for bringing it.
You know, you're my sensei when it comes to this kind of stuff. Dude, I dabbled in bending. I mean, I am nobody when it comes to, I've done some cool shit with my bare hands, and for me, it's my personal journey. It's a part of my landscape of spirituality and and physicalness or whatever.
Yeah.
It crosses over, you know, all my time that I spent, because it was intense. You had, no matter what you do, if you're bending, no matter what amount of time you spend it, it's intense, right? I mean,
yeah.
It is intense. There's no,
very you can't intense. Take
it light. There is no such thing as taking bending lightly.
Right. And it taxes you. And I found this out the hard way, right? Like, because like we all are, we're intense people, and we find something we love and we want to do it as much as we can. And even though the OGs were telling me like, that's too much frequency. Like you can't be bending hard like every day. I just burnt my CNS out so bad that I spent like a month where I just felt like weaker than hell, man. Like I couldn't do a damn thing. And finally now I'm fine tuning where it's like, you know, less is more. Like rest is truly the secret weapon. And it pisses me off that that is the case, because it's so fun and I get so much out of it. But that's the truth, man. It's like, you have to let yourself recover from this stuff. And the hand toughness went, as soon as I got into this and I saw dudes' hands and their freaking tendons sticking out of their arms, I immediately thought about like the Thai kids kicking the trees down and like developing their shins, you know, that's what I thought of, just that bone development. It's crazy.
Yeah. There's so many benefits, I mean, dude, it'll save your life someday too. You see movies, man, when you're holding your girlfriend and your grip strength holds out when you're over a cliff.
Yeah.
Come on, man, that shouldn't be a reason why you lose your woman, man.
So I want to talk about just physical training in general with you, because I know when you're at the Lion's Den, you guys went through some grueling shoot fighting type circuit training, body weight stuff and everything. And just like, get your thoughts on recovery. I know in those days that wasn't really even a thing. And you're also an obsessive dude, I know, but it's like, how have you matured from overtraining? Say, like, what's your journey been with overtraining, and like, what are your recommendations on that kind of stuff?
It was overtraining from 1990, February 1990 till probably 2007, when I 2007, that was when I ended up my second washout at Pararescue. Yeah.
Because you're all broken.
Yeah, I was okay. So everything was just always like, I never held back. You know, I have this ability to put everything into it. It's a two-edged sword, of course, you know, being passionate about things. But whenever I do something, I go 100%. It becomes my identity. It becomes everything. So, you know, and I just go hard and don't look back, because there's never going to be another chance or whatever. So I just go all the way with everything, and I do what I'm told. And if the smartest guy in the room, you know, is telling me what to do, and it's all relative. He's just the smartest guy in the room, not in the realm, you know? So, you know, like even when I first started, you know, I was training from like, I'd get off of school at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and training actively from about 4 till 10 o'clock, you know, little breaks here and there in between classes, but I was just nonstop every single day. I put the hours in. And then Lion's Den, you know, that was classes and working out. And then you got Lion's Den when I was 18, 19 years old. That was just pure. I mean, we were on a bodybuilder's diet, chicken and rice kind of thing, no fats, no, you know, just, I was literally, my shits were like a nugget, you know, because it was so efficient, you know, with how much I ate, how much my output was. It was just like, that was what it was reduced to. My body became, it wasn't like I was constipated. It was just, that's how efficient it was. I was like, geez. So, you know, and the joints just start going, and Taryn and Jason DeLucia and Frank and I would sneak off and get Burger King. You know, we had to sneak it, you know, just to get our and you get a beer and Burger King, eat a Whopper and have a beer. And then even coming in under John, there was lots and lots of training, but that was what, when did I meet John? So it was 98 with John, 97 with John. That was when I started going into a smarter approach of training. It got better, but it's still, remember, it's Louis. I got introduced to the conjugate method of training, which is really beneficial, which he eventually, like Louis's main course now, just like me and anybody else my age, I know, is about rehabilitation and longevity, about keeping people on, like not making the same mistakes we made with you overtraining in your youth. But everyone who's zealous in their youth, they're not going to fucking listen. It's right. I've come to this conclusion that nobody gets to learn. I mean, it's a very few people who are going to grasp it in their youth to be able to trust the older people. I'm not you and you're not me. Yeah. The same shit as a kid, I didn't listen either. So it's just always, I'm sitting here now finally learning a lesson I should have learned, a hard head makes for a soft ass, right? All these things, but the conjugate method is where things turned on and I really started understanding things. But I still didn't apply it yet. So I'm still just going balls to the wall with my training nonstop all the time. Any waking moment I have, I'm training, and I'm never recovering. Plus, I have generalized anxiety disorder, panic attacks, and I'm just a ball of mess, man. All the fucking things. So, all those years, of just constant taxing my central nervous system, destroying my joints, just my diet probably not right. I had shitty diets. I just ate everything and anything. High cholesterol meant higher testosterone. That was the idea. But as the injuries come and they force me to slow down, just like it did with my jiu-jitsu, it changed the landscape of my jiu-jitsu. Like the way I do jiu-jitsu, I created lots of no hand submission holds because my arms were pinned to my side. I had 6 shoulder surgeries, right? So three times I had my arms, pinned down, and sometimes they were pinned down at the same time. So I had but I still grappled. I didn't stop, but that gave birth to new techniques that make people look my way and ask me to pay me money. And I what I figured out from my injuries, but same thing with everything else. My training now is everything is about restoration, fluidity, or longevity. Something if that lift is going to hurt me in any way, I don't do it. I don't do deadlifts. I can't do deadlifts with heavy weight. I can do kettlebell kind of modified deadlifts. I can do reverse hypers. I can do glute ham raises. All the things that you find in the conjugate, the things and we switch things up. I'm just constantly rotating things out and I'm doing a different workout. And it's always, if it doesn't benefit me, if it doesn't increase my flexibility, if it doesn't reduce pain, whatever. My PRs are no longer on the numbers of anything. My PRs are how long I can stay out of the hospital. Or how much faster I can get my get on with my life in the morning. Is it going to take 2 hours or 1 hour? Those are my and the fact that I fucking get up every day. That's my big deal. Everybody's got, how far can you push yourself? Fuck you. Yeah. I'm putting myself every time I wake up and put one foot in front of the other at this point in my life. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. That hard ass. Someone sent me this. There's this dude, Anthony something. He's a pro strongman. And he had the greatest post. And I saw it right when I needed to hear it, because it's like, we're intense people. Especially with our passions, right? I think I can say that in a general sense to probably everyone that's listening to this. It's like, we're really probably not the people that need to be told hey, get after it, get all Jocko'd out, even though I do love Jocko and he's cool as hell. But it's the fact is we're the people that need to be hey, recovery matters. And this stuff, the hard ass, David Goggins method, that's for a select few, man. And it's there's just got to be some balance. And I think avoidance of balance it ties into like why I think bending is so attractive. And I've said on the show before, but you'd be a good person to talk to about this, is like bending to me is very binary, right? It's, is it bent? Yes or no, right? And we know as we grow up and become adults, have kids, jobs, whatever, the world is very gray if you're not a fucking idiot. like you understand nuance and like the fact that you cannot just segment everything out in the world to create that, like to make it make sense for you, right? So I'm interested in things that are simple like that. Bending is very simple. Crazy music is very simple, right? It's like, so I know, is it bent? Yes or no? That's very attractive. That's a nice thing to depend on, right? In a world full of chaos. So it's like, it's same with hard.
Yeah, binary. It's right. One or zero. It's black or white. It is what it is.
Right.
What, so same with about steel.
What's that?
Speaking of punk rock, you know, Henry, what does he say? What does Henry Rollins say about steel?
I don't know that.
Look it up. He has a quote about the iron. About iron. That's what it is. About lifting. It's the truth. You see, either you can or you can't. Kind of thing. It reveals the truth to you. It is a truth revealer.
Right. Right. So I think that just being a person, maybe that's like, damn, this world is, I'm getting kind of heavy here, but damn, this world is pretty crazy. And then you find these things that you can depend on to repeat, and there is no gray area. That's when the overtraining can come in, right? It's like, man, jujitsu, there's no line on the mat. The person either tapped or they didn't. I'm going to do this every second of my life, like forever, you know? And it's like, you find these things that make you feel like there's a little bit less chaos, and it's easy then to overdo them. That's the catch, you know?
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're an addictive personality, you know, or OCD in any way, you know, that's when a lot of the, I mean, just saying that right there is a word for unbalanced, to have an imbalance, but yeah, it's achieving balance in anything is, you know, that's the golden mean that, you know, like the whole thing about alchemy was never about turning lead into gold. It was about turning the human, you know, reaching the golden state of balance, which is so hard, dude.
Yeah.
It is so hard to do. We're always either in virtue or vice. You know, vice becomes virtue. Virtue becomes vice if it's too much. You know what I mean? Even good things become bad. That's a topic, when good things become bad, you know, and it never has anything to do with that thing. It's always the sick mind, the poisoned mind, the feverish city that resides in here, that, you know, in this republic, you know?
Yeah. And something you said on Grappling Central podcast, I just got to say thank you once again, man. I think it was something you didn't even put a lot of thought into, but it made a huge impact on the way I look at my training and the way I really think in general, was like, you said you have a different voice for yourself than you would use with anyone else, any one of your students, anyone that you're helping, anyone else, right? So it's like, anyone would be like, I don't really have one more in me. And you'd be like, oh, sure, no problem, man. Like, that's no big deal. Like, you know, like, but for yourself, you're like, motherfucker, you got five more in you. Like, you better get going. And like, you just have this other set of rules for yourself. And it's really kind of like, I think you said it's almost like egotistical in a way. And that made a lot of sense to me too. It's like
I'm better than, like, I'm setting myself up better than everyone else.
Right. Like, I've skipped warmups, right? Or like, I hurt my back because I didn't care about form on deadlift. It's like, I'm not rooting myself. I don't know what all this setting up is. I'm just going to pick that weight up off the floor and boom, hurt my back a little bit. You know, it's like, just like having that second set of rules for yourself, especially in training, that just like was really cool to hear you say that, man. That made a big impact on my training.
Do you find yourself, do you talk to yourself negatively, or do you have a positive voice in your head? Do you have a positive coach or a negative coach?
Well, I can say it was definitely 99% negative up until hearing that. And then like that kind of opened up a way to think about it. And then I've heard, you know, you then become open to hear things. And then on other interviews and other stuff I've read, I've heard other people like say a similar sentiment. So it's getting better, you know. It's like,
be careful, man, because I've got two coaches up there now, man. That might be borderline schizophrenia or something. I don't, you know, seriously, I've got like maybe three boys. There's mine, and then there's two coaches. You know, there's the one, yeah. You know, the asshole. There's the asshole me, and then there's the empath me, you know, the kind one, you know. Yeah. So there's two parts of me, dude. I'm angel and devil, you know. I'm
oh, me too.
I'm fucking fuck, this world better be great because I'm fucked. but yeah, dude, I got one like, Sean, you dumb motherfucker. Like, no, man, shut up, man. It's cool to fucking be cool. Yeah. You got this, you got this, you'll be all right. You know, and it's yep. Like one telling the other, it's like fucking shut up. Or sometimes, you know, the other one has to tell the other, no, man, he needs to hear this.
Yeah. Right. And I'm sure a lot of people deal with that, but I think just like the intensity level of people that really get into jiu-jitsu and don't just like stick around for a year and then bail or whatever. Like people that have been there a long time are pretty obsessive in certain ways. And then if you take that and then jump off into grip training and steel bending, we've got like some super ultra intense people that are like, I think that would be good for them to hear, you know what I mean? Like, so if anyone should go listen to Sean's episode on Grappling Central podcast, and you'll hear the actual words. I'm not really doing it service here.
Appreciate it. No, man, I used to be very intense. I used to be mean. Like, I mean, not mean. I loved I always loved anybody I trained with, but it was always free. Nobody ever paid. You know, I didn't start charging money until like 2016. That was when Emil Fisher, when I started training him, you know, we barter. He always helps me out. He sets me up to seminars, or like he knows. He's more of a personality out there. I'm a person. I like this kind of person. I like to be able to, what draws me out is when I talk to somebody else. I like talking to you. I like also, it's not about, I don't want to, you know, like just questions about me. I love asking questions. You know, I love finding out. Right. And I think the magic really happens when we can really have good things to share with people is when just two people connect like this. I can't just do a post and inspire people. Fuck that.
Right.
You know, I've realized nothing works. People don't hear, nothing see, whatever. It has to be a slowdown. There has to be a pause. We have to have a switching from like, I don't want to talk to somebody in a crowded room with lots of noise. Like I don't like teaching an environment where everything's so loud and I'm, because learning is a process, communication is a process, and you can't have all these distractions. I need to have connection like this in order for me to do anything. So even when I teach, I have seminars, yeah, that's great, but when the real magic happens is when I have a really small group. You know, if we got smoke bowl, you know, whatever. just getting into the group, you know, and just enjoying jiu-jitsu. Not about this tournament coming up, not about this. We're learning stuff just to learn and to see what happens, what kind of magic can be created, you know? Yeah. And that's a beautiful thing. And when I do privates, I mean, I'll take my mats, we'll go to a park.
Yeah.
You know, one time that's I had cool. My buddy, Richard Cook, the guy doing the octopus, my friend who's doing the octopus.
Oh, tattoo. Nice.
He's the one with, Greystone Tattoo Company.
Oh, right on.
Slay of the day kind of thing. But we had a private side because I teach him privates and he tattoos me. And we were in his backyard and we were in our gis and on the mats and everything. And then it starts like the thunderstorm clouds came in and everything. Like, oh, we better clean it up. And I was like, no, my mats are waterproof. So we're in there. Fucking torrential downpour. We're in our gis, fucking hard move, you know, heavy, you know, you know, and I remember getting me pinned down my back. And I just remember watching this raindrop, slow motion, falling from the sky right into my eyeball. And it was just so awesome, man. You know, it was just like, you know, you're looking up the sky. All you see is sky. All you see is nature. You don't see the land, you know, the landscape from all the way around. You're just looking up and, you know, and that was just like, we talked about that. I was like, I think we just ruined jiu-jitsu for ourselves because how do you get that back? You know, because that's not in a club, you know, that was a magical moment. That's what I'm talking
about. Right.
You
know? Right.
And that's what makes me fall in love with it over and over and over again is when I get to do it my way.
Yeah.
not by any way that's dictated to me or whatever. I like to have self-expression.
Yeah, totally. It's you know, we're coming up on like a year for me, like almost of no training. Just I have a little baby at home and stuff, and it just hasn't been right for me to return to the mat yet, but soon enough. And I've had a lot of time to reflect on my own training, you know, and I just thought about, like, I think I was talking to Scott about this. It's just like, I don't think I've become the martial artist that young child Cody had set out to be, right? It's just like, I got so specific into jiu-jitsu, and specifically jiu-jitsu competition, and specific butterfly guard to like single leg X to, you know, like, I want to, when I go back, I want to broaden it up again, you know, and just like be more like multifaceted in the sense of like, explore more catch wrestling. Like there's a guy nearby that teaches like Jeet Kune Do, maybe explore that a little bit, like just like, just like become more of a martial artist than like just a specific jiu-jitsu player, you know? Like, I just think like that was what my goal was at like 12 or 13 or whenever I really decided was like, yes, this is the coolest stuff ever. Like, I need to do this as soon as I can have access to it. And so really sitting here, like, with time away, I was like, you know what, I gotta do more of like the combative stuff, because I've neglected that way a lot, as sport jiu-jitsu is like fun, and more wrestling, explore more like kung fu and Jeet Kune Do type stuff, like just round it out, you know, like. And I think that's like something that
sounds to me preach. You're setting up your retirement plan, self-protection. you're shifting in life. Everyone I believe has a big bang and a big crunch, you know. For me, it was like 1 to 40 was my big bang.
Okay.
Over 40, I'm rounding off and I'm coming into my big crunch. Now I'm looking at my future, for my family, for like, how do I prepare? What are things I need to have that are needful? It's the things that I need more so than the things I want. It's the things that is more so my shadow and less my ego. Like the things I thought I wanted, but the actual things that I need are taking precedence. You know, so those kind of things I'm thinking about too. A lot of my stuff, you know, my jiu-jitsu I've always been a multifaceted person. I'm like a Swiss Army knife. I'm too ADHD nut. Yeah. I really am an octopus of martial arts, life experiences kind of things. I have so many things that don't fit together normally, but they come together. Like, this experience and that experience, I mean, come on, you know, they don't, you know, but I've made them work, and it's been cool. And I've always had that open, eclectic kind of feel. And one of the things was when I was about 22, I had a conversation with Jason DeLucia, and he said, you know, there are those who are martialists, and then there's the martial artists. He says, be the martial artist like you are. The martialist is that one person who does that one thing and that one thing only, like a fighter, you know, or like you were explaining the jiu-jitsu, only the jiu-jitsu tournaments and competition, you know, whatever. The martial artist is all of it, takes it all, brings it all in, and see how it can be used. Like, even in my jiu-jitsu, you're going to see kung fu.
Right.
You know, Scott was talking about his guy, you know, does Tai Chi. You know, and he's so relaxed, and he gets baited in jiu-jitsu moves because he's not telegraphing, because of his flow and his relaxation.
Right.
Things like that. So I have so many, I'm open to all of it, but that settling in, that big crunch that we feel that we're on that other side, and we have to now prepare, and the things that truly matter, and the fluff goes away, the coolness of BJJ, the cultness of BJJ, doesn't matter. You've been away from it, right? So you're not in the flame, or you're not in the fire of the church with the congregation where everybody's
right.
This is life. I can't live without you, you know, but I'm fulfilled in other ways, you know. My jiu-jitsu journey led me out of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Just like my religious journey led me out of religion.
Yeah.
You know, anything that's good will eventually, if it's really, truly good for you, it will make you better, and you no longer need it. Otherwise, it has no alchemical use for you.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're miserable still after 20 years of jiu-jitsu in your life, well, and you're still worried about the belts and ranks and stuff like that, you can make that connection as to why you're miserable.
Right, right.
You know, but if you're doing it just as like, I love the connection. I love that I'm talking to you right now because of jiu-jitsu.
Right. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
I didn't, you know what I mean? You know, but we've had how many conversations in the past few months?
Yeah.
This is what's cool about this. You know, it's like, I consider you my friend. You can come crash in my house anytime. I trust you enough. You know,
right.
Pen pals, man. Like back in the day, this was a highbrow thing to do, was to communicate with a stranger and get to know somebody else in the country or across the world. We can do it face to face now. It's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it's I like about jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
That's my jiu-jitsu. You know, that's my journey. You know, it's just fucking learn everything too, man. Learn it all.
Yeah.
Just have fucking fun, dude. And main thing is like Shingitai Jiu-Jitsu, the main thing that it's more of a philosophy than an art anyway. You know, Shin is the mind. We have three components. It's the mind. Gi is technique and Tai is body. You know, you have to have those three components. Anything in life, those three things have to be well.
Yeah.
You have to have a healthy mind. You have to have the ability to endure boredom. You have to have discipline. You have to have, you know, mental fortitude or resilience, those kind of things. And you also have to have good technique. You have to have good education. And when I say education, I don't mean college or institutionalized stuff. I'm talking education, learning how to have critical thought thinking, not just do rote memory, become a creator, that kind of thing. And then time, physical endurance, strength, flexibility, all those things. If you don't have them all together, you're missing components.
Right. Right.
So take the Shingitai three pillars, you know, and use that. So it's a way of like, for example, you want to be a complete thing about Shingitai Jiu-Jitsu. It's about being a complete fighter. You've got to be a good striker. You've got to be a good thrower.
Yeah.
Okay. We draw from judo, sambo, collegiate wrestling, you know, Greco-Roman, catch wrestling, whatever. A throw is a fucking throw. A punch is a punch and a kick is a kick. It doesn't fucking matter. And guess what? A choke is a choke. A leg lock's a leg lock. You don't put names on it. You know what I mean? These are just things, you know? So learn them all. Like you just know that to be a complete fighter, you know, and just in life, you have to understand knife work. You have to understand how to, you know, everyone wants to buy a gun, but let's go out and let me put you under stress inoculation, you know, and like put you under stress, put a gas mask on you, you know, give you tasks to do, and let's see how fast you can get that gun out and shoot your target accurately.
Right. Right.
Fucking idiot. You know, you're going to end up shooting yourself and somebody else because you don't know what the fuck you're doing. So there's gun kata. You know what I mean? There's things you've got to learn about all aspects. You know, in the street, you know, you want to know the difference between throws that are going to have you land under them on the concrete or throws that are going to have you on top of them. And, you know, there's all these things, man. And I never get bored, even if I can't do jiu-jitsu, which I can't, I don't get to grapple. Okay. Yeah. Because when I do grapple, I get hurt. But in my mind, I grapple just like every time I ever had an injury. Dude, I've been set back. I'm one of them fucking stories where I was set back over. I never got to self-actualize
in
the very fucking thing I ever wanted. I never got to do it. It's all unfinished for me, you know, but I don't have this urge to like live through a meal or any other students I have.
Right.
My time is done and gone. But whenever I got injured and I was down for a year, I visually projected. I wrestled in my mind. I created new things that I wanted to try. And when I got on the mats, dude, I was better than I was than when I left.
That's great.
It doesn't end. And so I'm going to tell you, like, by the time when you get back on the mat again, and, you know, you've already, I'm sure your mind has done this, especially if you're the kind of guy that has ruminating thoughts. Obviously, your imagination is probably pretty vivid. And you can have movies in there and you can, have you learned how to control the movies yet?
I feel like I do a lot of visualization right before I go to bed. It used to be all jujitsu. Now it's like bending feet and stuff. But, you know, I especially leading up to a competition, like, visualization is a very, very helpful thing, man. It's like, if you can get yourself into that state to where like, I would like be hearing the music, the song that would always come on when we were training, and like, and then I'd almost like smell the mat. It sounds insane. Like, but I'd be so like intensely thinking about what I felt like was going to happen and all the things that might happen and that I would like get. I think I can.
Yeah, you're the kind of guy who can bend steel. Like, until you do it, you don't understand it. I know what kind of mind you have. You know, just what was her name? Amanda? Yeah, like I know what kind of mind she has. Like when she was talking, it's like, I know this fucker, you know, like I know her. Like and anybody, you know, like there's like, okay, like there's gonna be there's that mindset connection that we as soon as we all touch foot and walk around each other, it's like we all have this common ground. We can get shit done if we put all our fucking heads together, but we also have probably some, you know, like demons too. When I say demons, I mean just like psychological issues, you know.
Sure.
Like, things like that. We're depressed. We're probably all a little bit depressed. We're probably all, you know, a little bit of a curmudgeon, but we love deeply, you know, that kind of thing. You know, so like, you know, there's, I already see it. You know what I mean? It's this kind of beautiful simplicity that baseline that we all have. And it's funny, like, you know what I'm talking about, but somebody who doesn't bend would hear this, like, what the fuck did that guy just say? What the fuck?
Right. All right. Before we start wrapping up, I usually ask my guests, who's the strongest person you know? This could be ever met before. This doesn't need to be strength. It could be mental strength. It could be like your grandpa. It could be some guy from your town. It could be some guy at Westside. Just, I was like, this is always an interesting one.
Strongest person I know. I'm not even gonna try to be like all philosophical and go with some, you know, like my 80-year-old, you know, I don't know.
Or maybe someone you grappled with that you're like, just Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, that was honestly, it's the John Saylor.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, there's like all the layers. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the layers.
Nice. All right. Tips and advice for beginners, let's say just beginners at physical training, beginners at jiu-jitsu, what should beginners keep in mind?
Have a sense of humor. Nice. You're nothing.
All right.
Yeah, you're gonna fail 1,000 times. It's okay. Find joy in failure in some ways. Yeah. Not like become lackluster turd. I'm just saying. You know, find the useful parts.
Right. How about the best piece of advice you were ever given? This could be about life in general, jiu-jitsu, strength, anything. Or one of the best pieces, because I'm sure.
I don't know, man. I'm one of those like I'm always baffled how like people can just pick one thing or have one thing. I've been so fortunate to just be around so many.
Yeah,
I just hear shit all the time. I mean, you know, it's like I fill my head with that kind of shit all the time. I don't know, man. Best piece of advice. Oh, my brother Tom, don't date someone who has more problems than you.
Oh, man.
By the way, so that we must be all right. So basically, don't get involved with people who have more problems than you.
That's sound advice.
Relationship, that's a balanced thing.
Yep. All right, and where can people find you if they want to get in touch and say what's up or ask a question or something?
Sean Doc Doherty on Instagram, and then Sean Doherty on Facebook. I have everything private, so you'll have to request. If you don't have a fucking face picture, you have nothing to show, I'm not going to accept your request. Yeah. I'm starting to want you remember how I said I'm on my down? You know, I just turned everything off
public
because I'm tired of everybody just, you know, all at once. It's hard, you know, I'd rather just be with people that I know, you know, people
want to get it.
You know, I'm there's too much going on out there. You know, we've stayed away from politics and we're going to continue with that. You know, I just don't like what's happening in the world right now, you know, and it's just too much to me, dude. It's just too much absurdity.
Yeah.
Everything is a spectacle and nothing is level. Everything is truth and there is no more truth. There is no more falsehood. Nobody knows anything out there. And it's starting to confuse me. So it's like, I need to break away. You know, just have this conversation. This is a highlight of my day. I really loved it.
Oh, thanks, man. And so
hopefully I wasn't too, like, I drank a
couple. That was great.
You know, and I was nervous being on here. So I get a little bit, I'm one of those people, I either am completely silent like a monk who took a vow of silence, or I'm verbal diarrhea. So it's, yeah, it all depends. I'm either on or off. I'm still in life. I'm trying to find my golden mean, right?
You know? Yeah. Oh, it's all good, man. And you teach out a strong style, right?
Yeah, but I teach
privates. Want to check that out.
I like to teach privates as well, and you know, nice. Seminars. That's, I like to be booked for seminars because I love human interaction outside right. of that. I like the old fashioned way.
Right. I got to make it down there to train with you, man. It's definitely on the agenda for this year. And I want to get one of those freaking strong style West Side collaboration t-shirts. Those things are the coolest things ever.
I'll get you one. I'll get you and Scott one.
Oh, man, that'd be great. I'll trade you a Beyond the Bench shirt. I'm making them this week.
All right. Awesome.
All right, Sean, this was a lot of fun, man. I appreciate it so much.
Same here. I really appreciate it. This was breath of fresh air, man. Thanks.
Thank you. I'll be in touch. Have a great night, man.
Thank you, brother.